Moni asked, "Why are you hiding?"
"We're not hiding," Reacher said. "We're just waiting for the funerals."
"So why the false names?"
"You brought us here as bait. Whoever they are, we don't want to make it easy for them."
"Don't you know who they are yet?"
"Do you?"
"No independent action, okay?"
"We're on Sunset Boulevard here," Reacher said, "which is LAPD turf. Are you speaking for them?"
"Friendly advice," Moni said.
"Noted." "Andrew McBride disappeared in Vegas. Arrived. Didn't check in anywhere. Didn't rent the car. Didn't fly out. Dead end."
Reacher nodded. "Don't you just hate that?" "But a guy called Anthony Matthews rented a U-Haul."
"The last name on Orozco's list."
Moni nodded. "End game."
"Where did he take it?"
"I have no idea."
Moni slid four business cards out of his top pocket. He fanned them out and placed them carefully on the table. His name and two phone numbers were printed on them.
"Call me. I mean it. You might need help. You're not up against amateurs here. Tony Swan looked like a real tough guy.
What was left of him."
Moni went back to work, and the waitress came over again 5 minutes later and hovered. Reacher guessed no one was very hungry anymore, but they all ordered anyway.
Old habits. Eat when you can. Don't risk running out of energy later. Swan would have approved.
Swan ate anywhere. Anytime. All the time.
Autopsies, exhumations, crime scenes.
In fact, Reacher was pretty sure that Swan had been eating a roast beef sandwich when they discovered Doug, the decomposed dead guy with the shovel in his head.
Nobody confirmed it.
Nobody talked at all.
The sun was bright outside the window. A beautiful day. Blue sky, small white clouds. Cars passed by on the boulevard. Customers came and went. Phones rang. Landlines in the kitchen and cells in other people's pockets.
Reacher ate methodically and mechanically, without the slightest idea what was on his plate.
"Should we move?"
Dixon asked.
"Now that Moni knows where we are?" "I don't like it that the clerk gave us up," O'Donnell said. "We should steal his damn TV remotes."
"We don't need to move," Reacher said. "Moni is no danger to us, and I want to know about it when they find Sanchez."
"So what next?"
Dixon asked.
"We rest up. We go out again after dark. We pay New Age a visit. We're not getting anywhere with surveillance, so it's time to go proactive."
He left $10 on the table for the waitress and paid the check at the register. Then they all stepped outside to the sunshine and stood blinking in the lot for a moment before heading back to the dunes. Reacher fetched the suitcase, and they gathered in O'Donnell's room and checked over the stolen Glocks. Dixon took the 19 and said she was happy with it. O'Donnell sorted through the remaining 6 17s and picked out the best three among them. He paired them with the magazines from the rejects so that he and Nagley and Reacher would have fast reloads the first time around. Dixon would have to reload manually after her first 17 shots. Not a huge issue. If a handgun engagement wasn't over inside 17 shots, then someone wasn't paying attention. And Reacher trusted Dixon to pay attention. She always had, in the past.
Reacher asked, "What kind of security can we expect around their building?"
"State-of-the-art locks," Nagley said.
"An intruder alarm on the gate?
I imagine the door opener at reception will be wired as a proximity sensor at night. Plus another intruder alarm, probably. Plus motion sensors all over the place inside. Plus intruder alarms on some of the individual office doors, maybe. All hardwired out through the phone lines. Possibly with wireless backup, maybe even a satellite uplink."
"And who's going to respond?"
"That's a very good question. Not the cops, I think. Too low rent. My guess is it will all pipe straight through to their own security people."
"Not the government?"
"That would make sense, for sure. The Pentagon is spending zillions there. You'd think the government would want to be involved. But I doubt if they are. Not everything makes sense nowadays. They gave airport security to private contractors, and the nearest DIA office is a long way away. So I think New Age's security will be handled in-house, however cool Little Wing is.
How long will we have after we breach the gate?
Who says we're going to? We don't have keys, and you can't pick a lock like that with a rusty nail. I don't think we'll be able to beat any of the locks.
I'll worry about the locks. How long will we have after we're inside?
2 minutes?
Nagley said.
A situation like that, the two-minute rule is the only thing we can rely on.
Okay, Reacher said. We'll go at 1 in the morning, dinner at 6. Get some rest. The others headed for the door. He followed them out with the keys to the captured Chrysler in his hand. Nagley looked at him quizzically. We don't need it anymore, he said to her. I'm going to give it back. But first I'm going to have it washed. We should try to be civilized. Reacher drove the Chrysler back to Van Nuys Boulevard, north of the Ventura Freeway. The auto strip, where there were car-related enterprises of every kind lined up side by side, one after the other. Dealers, obviously, new and used, cheap and expensive, gaudy and restrained. But also tire shops, wheel shops, paintless dent repair, lube franchises, muffler and shock shops, and accessory stores, and car washes. There was a huge choice. Machine washing, brushless hand washing, underbody steam cleaning, three-stage waxing, full-service detailing. He drove a mile up and a mile back and picked out 4 places that offered everything. He stopped at the first of them and asked for the total treatment. A swarm of guys in coveralls took over, and he stood in the sun and watched them work. First the interior was vacuumed out, and then the whole car was dragged through a glass tunnel on a moving chain and was sprayed by a sequence of nozzles with water and all kinds of foams and fluids. Guys with sponges washed the sheet metal, and guys on plastic steps lathered the roof. Then the car passed under a roaring air dryer and was driven out to the apron, where other guys waited to attack the interior with aerosols and rags. They went over every inch and left it gleaming and immaculate and damp with oily residue. Reacher paid and tipped and pulled his gloves out of his pocket and put them on and drove the car away. He stopped 100 yards farther on, at the second place he had picked out, and asked for the whole process to be repeated all over again. The receptionist looked puzzled for a second, and then shrugged and waved the crew over. Reacher stood in the sun again and watched the show. The vacuum, the shampoo, the interior, the aerosols, and the towels. He paid and tipped, and put his gloves back on and drove back to the motel. He left the car in a corner of the lot, in the sun, where it would dry. Then he walked a long block south to Fountain Avenue, found a place that had started out as a pharmacy, and then had become the kind of drugstore that sold all kinds of small household items. He went in and bought 4 flashlights, 3-cell mag lights, black, powerful enough to be useful, small enough to be maneuverable, big enough to be used as clubs. The girl at the register put them in a white bag with I Love L.A. on it, 3 capital letters and a red heart-shaped symbol. Reacher carried the bag back to the motel, swinging it gently, listening to the quiet rustle of plastic. They couldn't face Denny's again for dinner. They called out to Domino's instead for pizzas and ate them in the battered lounge next to the laundry room. They drank soda from a noisy red machine outside the door, a perfect meal for what they had in mind. Some empty calories, some fats, some complex carbohydrates. Time-release energy. Good for about 12 hours. An army doctor had explained it all to them many years before.
Objectives for tonight?
O'Donnell asked. 3, Reacher said. First, Dixon hits the reception desk for anything useful. Second, Nagley finds the Dragon Lady's office and hits that. You and I hit the other offices for whatever else they've got. 120 seconds in and out. Then third, we ID the security people when they show up.
We're waiting around afterward.
I am, Reacher said. You guys are heading back. Reacher went up to his room and brushed his teeth and took a long hot shower. Then he stretched out full length on the bed and took a nap. The clock in his head woke him at 12:30. He stretched and brushed his teeth again and dressed. Gray denim pants, gray shirt, black windbreaker zipped all the way up, boots tightly laced, gloves on. The Chrysler keys in one pants pocket, the spare Glock mag in the other. The captured cell phone from Vegas in one shirt pocket, his own phone in the other. The maglite in one jacket pocket, the Glock itself in the other. Nothing else. He walked out to the lot at 12:50. The others were already there, a shadowy trio standing well away from any pools of light. Okay, he said. He turned to O'Donnell and Nagley. You guys drive your Hondas. He turned to Dixon. Carla, you drive mine. You park it close, facing west, and you leave the keys in for me. Then you ride back with Dave.
Dixon said, Are you really going to leave the Chrysler there?
We don't need it.
It's full of our prints and hair and fiber.
Not anymore. A bunch of guys up on Van Nuys just made sure of that. Now let's go.
They bumped fists like ball players, an old ritual, and then they dispersed and climbed into their cars.
Reacher slid into the Chrysler and started it up. The heavy V8 beat slow and loud in the darkness. He heard the Hondas start, their smaller engines coughing and popping, and their big bore mufflers throbbing. He backed out of his slot and turned and headed for the exit. In his mirror, he saw three pairs of bright blue headlights strung out behind him. He swung east on Sunset and south on La Brea, and then east again on Wilshire, and saw the others following him all the way, a ragged little convoy hanging together in the light nighttime traffic. Chapter 63. The great city went quiet after they passed MacArthur Park and hit the 110. To their right, downtown was silent and deserted. There were lights on in Chinatown, but no visible activity. In the other direction, Dodger Stadium was huge and dark and empty. Then they came off the freeway and plunged into the surface streets to the east. Navigation had been difficult by day, and was worse by night. But Reacher had made the trip three times before, twice as a passenger and once as a driver, and he figured he could spot the turns. And he did, without a problem. He slowed three blocks before New Age's building and let the others close up behind him. Then he led them through a wide two-block circle, for caution's sake. Then a closer pass on a one-block radius. There was mist in the air. The glass cube looked dark and deserted. The ornamental trees in the lot were uplit with decorative spots, and the light spilled a little and reflected off the building's mirror siding. But apart from that, there was no specific illumination. The razor wire on the fence looked dull gray in the darkness, and the main gate was closed. Reacher slowed next to it and dropped his window and stuck his arm out and made a circular gesture with his gloved finger in the air, like a baseball umpire signaling a home run. One more go-round. He led them through three-quarters of a round trip and then pointed at the curb where he wanted them to park. First Nagley, then O'Donnell behind her, then Dixon in his own silver prelude. They slowed and stopped, and he made throat-cutting gestures, and they shut their motors down and climbed out. O'Donnell detoured all the way to the gate and came back and said, It's a very big lock. Reacher was still at the wheel of the idling Chrysler. His window was still open. He said, The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
We doing this stealthy?
Not very, Reacher said. I'll meet you at the gate. They walked ahead, and he put the Chrysler in gear and followed them, slowly.
The roads all around New Age's block were standard 22-foot blacktop ribbons, typical of new business park construction. No sidewalks. This was L.A. 21,000 miles of surface streets, probably fewer than 21,000 yards of sidewalk. New Age's gate was set in a curved scallop, maybe 20 feet deep, so that arriving vehicles could pull off the roadway and wait. Total distance between the gate and the far curb, 42 feet. Automatically, the manic part of Reacher's mind told him that was the same as 14 yards, or 504 inches, or 0.795% of a mile, or a hair over 1,280 centimeters, in European terms. He turned 90 degrees into the scallop and straightened head-on, and brought the Chrysler's front bumper to within an inch of the gate. Then he reversed straight back all the way until he felt the rear tires touch the far curb. He put his foot hard on the brake and slotted the transmission back into drive and dropped all four windows. Night air blew in, sharp and cold. The others looked at him, and he pointed to where he wanted them, two on the left of the gate and one on the right.